are, matey?
Today on Every Little Timbers, pirates. We're investigating a question that came in from ELT listener John, who might have been marooned on an island when he called.
Are the hooks and peg legs, is this a real thing? I need to know.
Hello?
Hey, John. It's Flora from ELT.
Hi, Flora. How are you doing?
I'm well. You said you need to know about peg legs. Are you ready to know the truth?
I'm ready to dive in. I have to do warn you, though. I'm going to try my hardest to make as many nautical puns as I can.
Good. Someone has to do that job, and I'd actually rather it not be me. So, great. Where did your interest in pirates begin?
So, I'm a big gamer. And this game came out, and it's called Sea of Thieves.
The life of a pirate is fraught with danger.
And I actually accidentally fell in love with the whole pirate life through this game.
Step into the unknown.
Okay, I'm watching a trailer for the game. So you have an avatar.
Yes. My character is a female pirate who has a beard.
What's her name?
I go by Captain Yarb.
Can I call you Captain Yarb?
You wouldn't be the first. You won't be the last either.
Okay, Captain Yarb. You wanted to know whether the hooks, the peg legs, like the classic pirate tropes, are fact or fiction. We ran it by a pirate historian.
A pirate historian? How do you get that title? That's an awesome job.
Her name is Laura Sook Duncombe, and she's written a book about pirates.
My expertise is actually pirate women, so I'm sure I will have some lady business to work in among the peg legs and the hooks.
That's awesome.
So you want to know how much of our conception of pirate is legend and how much is true?
Yes.
Captain Yarb, I want you to know that I think this is a great question, and I hope it is just the beginning of your exploration into the real world of the pirates.
Is this one of those iceberg situations where it's way deeper under the waters?
It always is. And yes, we're going way beyond the hook and the peg leg.
Yes.
So first thing, our image of a generic pirate, like the Halloween costume version, is inspired by a real time in history.
When you think of a pirate Halloween costume, that is this like narrow time in a small area in the Caribbean. That's the golden age, and that's where most of our pirate myths and history comes from.
There is a golden age of pirates.
So what year is that?
That is about 1650 to 1730, if you want to be generous, in the Caribbean. And it was just a ton of very successful pirates in an incredibly concentrated space.
This is when you get Blackbeard, Captain Kidd, like the pirates you've heard of. But there are tons of other pirates at this time, too. Like, here's a crazy stat from the Bahamas.
Pirates outnumbered lawful citizens on New Providence Island, like 2-1, you know, at some point in the early 1700s. So it was just all pirates all the time.
So, like, was it a thing that just kind of happened? How did this come to be?
Right. Why so many pirates at this time in this place? Because they weren't the first pirates.
Pirates are someone who steals something on the sea.
Which means that pirates have been around for a long time.
Since the dawn of recorded history. If you have water and you have a craft to sail upon water, there are going to be people who want to steal the things that you have.
Right.
So there are pirates in ancient Greece, like mentioned in the Odyssey. There are government-sanctioned pirates.
Queen Elizabeth would not have been able to build her empire if not for the help of her personal team of pirates who gave her the money that Parliament was unwilling to front her.
What?
But the golden age of pirates arises for a very particular reason.
The triangle trade, the slave trade that goes from Europe to Africa to the Caribbean,
is happening right at this time.
There's a lot of money in the Caribbean. And so there's a big opportunity for money to be stolen.
But it wasn't just about the booty. Pirates were also revolting against society and against their oppressors. Pirate crews included sailors who wanted out of the Navy, indentured servants, runaway slaves. People looking to escape their current situation could join a pirate ship.
Pirates were remarkably democratic. You know, they were racially integrated. They were religiously integrated.
The captain was elected by a vote. There were even social programs for pirates.
There were provisions for disability. And so if you lost a leg, you got an extra share. If you lost use of one of your eyes, you got a few extra shares. It was, you know, they had this sort of primitive health insurance that's just really kind of mind-boggling.
I don't want to put too rosy of a spin on this because pirates were also known to be involved in some ruthless activities. But you can see why pirating might attract people. And it did. It attracted many people. But did they all look like they walked off a Captain Morgan's bottle?
Right. How do we get to peg legs and hooks from here?
Let's go through pirate tropes one by one and find out if there's any basis in reality.
Let's do it.
What should we start with?
The parrot. Or a monkey or some kind of pet on your shoulder.
Get me a cracker, lazy sea dog.
Okay, we don't have confirmation on the shoulder placement, but in terms of parrots being on board the ship...
There were definitely parrots on many pirate ships. Because of the triangle trade that I mentioned, they brought a lot of tropical birds from, you know, Africa and South America, and they were taken back to Europe to sell.
So parrots were sometimes part of the loot that pirates captured.
I gotcha.
What's the next pirate stereotype that we should fact check, Captain Yarb?
Peg leg.
Pirates were occasionally fitted with a peg leg. This is not completely unheard of, but it's not like every ship had, you know, two or three peg legs.
Because it's dangerous to be at sea, people are losing limbs, and this is a form of prosthetic that exists at the time. The problem is that being on a rolling ship with a peg leg seems hard.
Your ability to contribute on a pirate ship goes down when you have a peg leg.
Work in the docks. That's the new life for ye.
Yeah, there you go. Okay, while we're on limbs, what do you think about the hook? You think that one's real?
I don't think it is.
I have never heard of a pirate with an actual hook.
This seems to be an invention of Captain Hook.
The world's most famous crook.
So if you lost an arm, you wouldn't replace it with some kind of tool?
No, not really. Because, you know, you need your hand for doing intricate sword fighting and rope braiding. And you don't have dexterity with a hook or a club or anything like that.
Can I throw one in?
Yes.
I want to do walking the plank.
Unless you do, you'll walk the plank.
Okay, that's a hard no. Sorry to burst everybody's bubble, but that is a hard no. If a pirate wanted to punish you, they would either shoot you or maroon you, you know, just leave you on an island because they didn't have room for you. Or they would, in extreme cases, keelhaul you, which is where they tie a rope to your hands and your feet and they drag you under the bottom of the ship.
That is brutal.
I know. Is there any plank walking or keel hauling in your game in Sea of Thieves?
There's no keel hauling for sure. That's new to me. There is a plank you can use, but you pretty much always use it to like get on and off a dock.
Okay, while we're on pirate intimidation techniques, can you think of any other classic pirate tropes that are intimidating?
So there's always the black flag with the skull and cross swords.
Yeah, I think of the skull and crossbones one, and that was a real pirate flag.
Yeah, the pirate flag that we think of now as a pirate flag was Jack Rackham's pirate flag, who is a small-time pirate from the Caribbean who is known for the skull and crossbones.
And this style of flag comes to be called the Jolly Roger.
The Jolly Roger. I feel like I've heard that before.
But yes, this one checks out.
It's a good design. I mean, if you're going to try to provoke fear in whoever you're stealing from, I mean, I don't know if there's a better flag for it.
I agree. In terms of other ways that pirates struck fear into people's hearts, there are true stories that blow Disney out of the water. Like, you know the pirate Blackbeard?
Yes.
This dude knew how to make an entrance.
He was known for tying, like, lit fuses in his beard.
Lit fuses. Wow.
Like, he'd walk in a room and his head would appear to be smoldering.
He had, like, a do-it-yourself, like, smoke bomb entrance.
I'm just trying to imagine if that's your routine in the morning. Like, you wake up, and you're like, I have to braid in my fuses.
I mean, it's only on special days, though. I mean, it's on taking a prize day. It's not, like, every day. You know, it's put on your Sunday best. Like, it's like, okay, today is a fuse day. Like, we're going to capture a ship.
Why isn't that in the movie?
I know. All right, I want to get to the lady business that Laura promised us. And this is personally relevant to you, right? Because of your character in the game?
Yes.
There have been women pirates since the dawn of pirates. And they sailed right alongside and sometimes in command of their male counterparts.
Captain Yarb, what does Captain Yarb wear in the game?
So she's got this long maroon dress.
That's gotta go.
The saucy wenches, that's just not really accurate.
Laura, which pirate do you think Captain Yarb should model his look after? Which lady pirate?
Well, if I had to pick a lady pirate to model my avatar or indeed my life on, I would definitely go with Chang Yi Zhao. She was a pirate in China in the early 1800s, and she was the most successful pirate of all time, male or female, no question.
Wait.
Yeah.
What?
So Chang Yi Zhao started out life in a brothel and then married a small-time pirate, Chang Yi. So Chang Yi Zhao just means wife of Chang Yi. Her real name has been lost to history. But they built a sort of fledgling pirate confederacy. Then Chang Yi is killed in 1807, and she takes over the whole thing. At her height, she had, you know, over 1,000 ships and somewhere between 40,000 and 70,000 men under her command, which is larger by a long shot than many legitimate navies. She brought China to its knees.
40,000?
Yeah. She had multiple fleets. They made so much money, they had to sort of start an onshore sort of banking system. They had like little accounting houses to keep track of their money because of how much money they made.
What?
And when she decided to leave piracy, because it was clear that no one could stop her, she went to the Chinese government and said, all right, I will surrender, but this is what you have to do. And, I mean, she got to keep her ships. She got to keep her money. And my favorite part of the whole thing is that the Chinese government put together a fund to assist these pirates to transition into civilian life. And so, you know, these pirates sort of got a pension from the government to help them become law-abiding citizens and after they retired from piracy. And so, I mean, what she did is just, there's no scale to compare it to in terms of other pirates. You know, Blackbeard had a couple ships for a few years. You know, she had this thing running for a long time with, like we said, you know, 40,000 men, 1,200 ships. And when she retired, she got to keep it all.
She's a badass.
Yeah. Absolutely. When little children dress up as pirates, they should dress up as Chang Yi Zhao. And we should have to tell children, you're like, you know, pirates can be men too. Like, not all pirates were women, you know?
I like that.
Let your brother play pirates also, be fair.
I like that. Let's flip the script on this. Okay, Captain Yarb, there's some inspiration for you. Seems like you have some work to do on that avatar.
Okay, so we've got to replace the dress.
For sure. Then you got to make 40,000 friends for your fleet. And then you definitely need some lip fuses for her beard.
That would be ridiculous and awesome.
After the break, a question about the emergency exits in underwater tunnels.
We're in a tunnel. Where is that door taking me? Hi, my name is Kirsten. I am currently in a tunnel, and I noticed that every few feet there was a door that would say exit and then would say slide for emergency. We're in a tunnel. Where is that door taking me?
Yeah, where is that door taking me? You may recall, we did an episode on tunnels not that long ago, and Kirsten had a follow-up question that was too good to pass up. Plus, we knew just who to call.
Dr. Mole Incorporated?
Hi, I'm looking for Dr. Mole.
One moment, please.
Gary Barley.
Hey, Dr. Mole. We had a follow-up question from a listener. Do you have 5 minutes to help us answer it?
Well, sure, yeah. I guess I'm committed now to every little thing, so...
That's right. We have you on retainer, factual retainer. Okay, the question was specifically about the Ted Williams Tunnel in Boston. Do you know that one?
Yes, I'm very familiar with how it was built.
So when you see a door in that tunnel, or any underwater tunnel, and that door says emergency exit, where could that door possibly go?
These are huge steel tubes, okay?
Like the highways are in steel tubes.
And there's two tubes down there. One tube goes into the city and the other tube comes out of the city. So they're two completely separate tunnels. And what happens is this door takes you from one tunnel into the other tunnel.
Am I imagining this right? Just two straws sitting next to each other and the door goes between the two straws?
Yeah, you say straws, but these are very large straws, obviously.
Big straws.
But yeah, it's a door allows you to go from one tunnel to the other tunnel and get out of the tunnel with the problem. So that's the purpose of those doors. They're called cross passages.
Cross passages. Okay. So the exit doors take you to the other tunnel.
That's correct.
So there's no exit door that takes you outside of tunnels.
No. That would not be a very good idea, no.
What if there's only one tunnel?
Well, that's a problem.
Thanks for answering Kirsten's question, Dr. Moll. I feel like we're going to call you again. I could do tunnels every week, every little tunnel.
Well, I don't care if you want to ask me questions. I like, I find tunnels to be quite, whenever I'm sitting on the plane and the guy next to me says, what do you do? And I say, tunnels. They always are very fascinated in that. They don't talk to very many people who do tunnels. It's not like IT people. You know, 90% of the time when I ask the guy next to me what he does, he says IT. Early on, when I was told about computers, you know, everybody said computers are great because you can work in your home. These guys are always on the plane. I don't know why they can't do it from home. That's what they were bragging about. But when I say tunnels, they say, oh, I've never met anybody who does tunnels before. And then they usually ask me a bunch of questions about tunnels. One of them is, what happens with tunnels?
And if you have a question we can help you with, give us a ring. 833-RING-ELT. That's 833-746-4358.
Every Little Thing is produced by Phoebe Flanagan, Aaron Reese, Bradley Campbell, Annette Heist, and Flora Lichtman, with help from Nicole Pasulka and Doug Barron. Our consulting editors are Ian Chillug and Caitlin Kenny. Dara Hirsch scored and mixed this episode. Goodbye.